We are ready.
Great. Can I begin?
Yes.
Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the chairman of the Transportation Commission. This is a regular meeting of the commission. Before we begin, I'd like to take a roll call in alphabetical order. The record reflects who is participating. That you are present. Commissioner Berry? Commissioner Einhorn?
Present.
Commissioner Kizashi?
Present.
Mr. Hankins?
Present.
Mr. Streeter?
Here.
And my fellow chairman, Owen Egan. Thank you. This meeting is open to the public and is being conducted solely through the use of electronic equipment.
Deputy Corporation Counsel for the City of New Haven.
I wish to be heard.
I don't think it's very heard.
Thank you. I entertain a motion. This was a withdrawal.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Streeter, this was a withdrawal and dismissal. I move adoption to the House.
Is there a second?
Mr. Atkins, second.
Yes.
Mr. Kizashi?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kizashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Oh, yes.
Mr. Michael Paul, he did yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Thank you, Attorney Mark. Next is docket number FYC 2021-0540, Leo Burgos, Flores.
Okay, I'm ready. Julio Burgos.
Thank you, Justin.
Mr. Chairman, it's Attorney Richard Scapini. I'm here for the respondents.
Good morning, Mr.
This is David Howell, I'm present.
Yes, and this is Assistant Attorney General Philip Miller.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is the town attorney, James Baldwin, for the respondent, town of Fairfield.
All failed to appear. There was a dismissal that no objection was responded and moved out of there. Not supported.
Sorry, sir. I have a second.
Motion
is
made. Second.
Is
there discussion?
Hearing none.
All
in
favor, I'll take a roll call. Mr. Einhorn.
Yes.
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 Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, all in favor.
And I'm ready to proceed.
Mr. Streeter, I'll move it off to the hearing officer's report.
Sorry to interrupt. Sorry to interrupt. It's Colleen Murphy. We do have a notation that Ms. Byrne will be participating today. So if you can hold off on adopting that, maybe we'll see if we have any issue, if she's waiting to get into the meeting or something like that. So perhaps just hold off on adopting it.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I'll withdraw my motion.
I can go.
Chairman, Mr. Streeter, withdrawal and dismissal, yes, I'll move adoption to hear those.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Yes.
Entirety. There is no need to request recording from the commission. Should you wish to listen to the recording, it will be available on our website very soon after this meeting. If you have any issues with that, contact the commission. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral argument is 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the parties. Just one last thing, if everyone could try to remember to mute themselves to avoid background noise. We have a number of people on the call, so that would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Of the testimony was there. An extensive search was made
and that there were no records responsive to this request. That was the basis of Hearing Officer Ross's decision that the complaint should be dismissed, and I would respectfully request that a recommended order be adopted by the commission.
Thank you. Any commissioners have any questions?
Take that position and follow the wishes of the legislature as you consider this today. Thank you very much. No, there was a sentence happening in this case. And the owner of the registered and went to the auditor and went to the Attorney General's office, who reviewed the executive of the Congress whistleblower complaint, all testified that at least for the last hour, they clearly couldn't identify the whistleblower, even though the name was that based on the information that whistleblower had. And even if the analysis one, I think the council really was that we never know, it's very difficult to know what strain or paragraph percentage you could be out that this is a person that's not a co-worker, that person not in the industry, might not be able to identify the whistleblower, but someone that actually works with them or is aware of the fact, well, no, you never know what whistleblower had told you certain people that have access to certain information or certain areas. And I think that was the concern. That before hearing officer, and then I guess if she did review in camera all the whistleblower complaints and made that ineffective determination in this case based on this customary situation. And given that, I would ask you to affirm the hearing officer's report. Thank you for the question. Thank you.
Thank you. Any of the commissioners have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I will move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Einstein?
Yes.
Mr. Sashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Thank you.
Next is document number FIC 2021-017, Bill Vergara versus Deerpoint County Fairfield and Township. Are you there, Mrs. Vergara?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are you there, Attorney Baldwin?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Attorney Baldwin, would you like to begin?
Yes. Okay, I will be brief because we fully support the proposed findings by the hearing officer. I just want to take this opportunity to point out the opportunity for the commission to perhaps comment on the interplay with significance, if any, in your view of the rather robust notice provision set forth in Connecticut General Statute Section 23-59 concerning the posting of the notices publicly on the actual trains, the tree wardens, and how that was totally widened in the situation and resulted in a very robust hearing attended by many, many individuals who expressed interest. I won't repeat the findings in paragraphs, I believe, 14 and 15, what the tree warden had done. And then I'd also just like to point out, as we did in our brief, as I hope you will receive and review, the question of the claimant's or complainant's status or standing here, considering that she testified herself that she had known about the actual date of the hearing and that did not plan to attend, and she did not present any evidence that anybody missed that hearing. In fact, to the contrary, as some paragraphs I referenced earlier point out, it was attended by several dozen. That's all I have for you. Thank you.
Clarifying language to the altered cherry tree agenda to indicate to the
public that the notice had been corrected after the meeting had taken place, and would ask the commission to adopt the notice holding them the hearing officer's report. I did want to take this time to highlight some points. Several mistakes were made by the town. Mistakes aren't the problem. I certainly understand that mistakes happen. It's how they were handled, or actually not handled, actively ignored, and then retroactively fixed. What is most concerning to me is the town doubling down on their mistakes, leading to what were, in my mind, more serious violations. As the hearing officer confirmed in her report, the tree warden's agenda was incorrectly dated and thus violated Section 1-225 of the general statute. This violation was presented to the town attorney in a timely way, before any final action had been taken with these historic cherry trees. Ms. Jacobson emailed the town attorney about the notice violation, but received no response from Mr. Oldman, which is also noted in the hearing officer's report. When confronted with this fact at the November 24th, 2021 hearing, and asked why she did not respond to Ms. Jacobson's inquiry, the town attorney openly scoffed and stated, "I didn't think it deserved a response." Ms. Jacobson is not only a concerned Fairfield citizen, she is an elected official of Fairfield who sits on the Board of Education. I find Mr. Baldwin's unwillingness to respond to Ms. Jacobson's inquiry extremely concerning and problematic. The right thing to do would have been to acknowledge the mistake at that point in time and to hold another meeting, or at the very least, explain what had happened and why the town was permitted to proceed with the cherry tree removal. Rather than doing that, the town attorney ignored the violation and authorized the removal of historic trees while the court injunction was pending and while this FOIA complaint was pending. These were egregious mistakes. In addition, the respondent openly states in its post-hearing brief on page 3 that, quote, in response to Jacobson's March 24th email, pointing out the fact that the agenda for the March 22nd hearing notice was, in fact, the old March 15th agenda. The town clerk's office changed the posted document to reflect the correct March 22nd date on or about March 25th. This constitutes an intentional alteration after the meeting had occurred of a meeting notice because a notice violation has been identified. I had assumed that the clerk's office altered the agenda after the fact because someone in the office realized they had forgotten to follow the tree warden's instructions to remind the date, not because the clerk's office was aware of an email identifying a notice violation and they were retroactively fixing that violation. This admission is a revelation to me, and it constitutes a seriously troubling action by the town clerk. This action by the town clerk's office cannot stand. While I do appreciate the hearing officer's order and the town add clarifying language to the published notice to indicate that the notice has been corrected from its original form, respondents' public hearing brief makes clear that this correction was more of an alteration to cover up the notice violation that Ms. Jacobson's email identified and which it was directly responding to. I disagree with Officer Murphy's determination that the town did not violate Section 1-240 of Connecticut's general statute, but it knowingly altered a public record. The hearing agenda for the March 2017 public meeting that was incorrectly dated March 15th. After the meeting had occurred and in response to a resident email pointing out the new agenda, and I think it sets a bad precedent to enable towns to alter meeting agendas after those meetings have occurred. Post-dating and elimination of the original hyperlink after the meeting had occurred should receive more scrutiny. I ask this commission to make clear to all government actors in this state that the alteration of public records is unacceptable and will not be permitted. I would also like to clarify another point raised by the respondent. Respondents have pointed out that I did not present evidence of anyone being aggrieved by this notice violation. I have to apologize and say that I was not focused on presenting such evidence. We also asked specifically about her desire to attend the public meeting. Had she known the correct date? I also did not seek out any others in the community who may have attended the public hearing had they known the correct date. Ms. Jacobson would have attended the meeting had she known the correct date, and I'm sorry that I didn't make that clear in my submissions and statements to this commission. I don't know whether there are others who were misled by the notice violation to abide by notice provision is that there's a very likely chance that you're grieving someone in public. It's simply impossible to make such a statement as I cannot identify all people in town who may have been interested in attending a public hearing, nor do I believe that I have to engage in such conjecture. The respondent asserted that the release sought in my conclusion was to hold another meeting. This is also inaccurate. In my initial email complaint dated March 30th, 2021, I did indeed seek a new meeting because the four cherry trees actually still existed at that time, and an injunction was pending against the tree's removal. Had the tree still existed when I presented my case to the hearing officer, I would have asked for another meeting. But because the tree had been removed prior to the injunctive hearing and prior to the adjudication of this court, a new meeting would serve absolutely no purpose. Therefore, I stated in my brief, once the trees were removed, irreparable harm was done. There simply is no remedy which will enable the public to have a due process. And I conclude in my brief on pages 5 and 6, the facts in this case speak for themselves. An important meeting on an important public issue was not properly noted. Respondents were made aware of the mistake, respondents ignored the mistake, and proceeded as if the public hearing were a properly noted hearing. Rather than correcting the mistake in an open and transparent way by calling another properly noted meeting, respondents issued a final decision which directly impacted a very important common resource, Ironhead Store cherry trees. Respondents could have easily called another meeting. They didn't. Nor did they ever respond to the public inquiry into the notice violation. Instead, respondents retroactively altered public records and authorized removal of the trees while knowing that the public meeting was in violation of FOIA requirements. And knowing that a FOIA complaint and an injunction against the removal of trees is pending, respondents would not publicly admit its mistakes or attempt to remedy them in any way. Respondents' actions reflect a complete disregard for the rules and for the public interest and transparency that those rules represent. It is incumbent on this commission to protect the sanctity of these FOIA rules and ensure that these mistakes never be repeated. The only way to do so is to find respondent in violation of FOIA and issue a strong reprimand requiring a public admission of wrongdoing and public affirmation that this will not happen again. What I thought and continue to see is an admission of wrongdoing, an admission that there was a violation. For some reason, something so simple and straightforward is apparently impossible and unthinkable. It's worth noting again that I attempted to settle with the respondent. I did not want to have to meet their witnesses and the commission staff to appear at a hearing the day before Thanksgiving. I knew that that was very burdensome for many people. I reached out to our office and asked whether the town would admit the FOIA violation. None of them is going to repeat this mistake in the future. Two very simple things. But the town refused my offer. This behavior is wasteful of all of our time. It's wasteful of taxpayer money. It's pure arrogance. Thank you again for your time. I really do appreciate it. This commission serves a very important function, and I thank you for what you do and what you stand for everyone in Connecticut.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
Mr. Strader, I'll move the applicant off the report.
Mr. Hankin, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call. Those in favor, Mr. Eisenberg?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, hello.
Anyone here from the state of Connecticut at this time? Do you wish to begin?
I do. Thank you very much. I appreciate very much the opportunity to appear before you tonight.
Everyone on that's out there to please mute your phones. We're getting feedback noise from your office, wherever you are. Please mute your phones, except for the person that's speaking. Thank you. Go ahead, ma'am.
Yeah, thank you very much. I frankly am not surprised that there has been nobody here on behalf of the respondents. The conduct here by the state has been indefensible. I did not learn until the day of the hearing, which was about a year after I filed my Freedom of Information request, that the state admitted it had made a mistake as to the parties in this matter. In fact, even as I'm speaking, the docket of the state is incorrect. I filed a request with Matt Marion, the State Department, but I was on. That never changed. I never heard from them. No one responded to my request, never responded to it. But that doesn't make any for changing the name of the case to Commissioner Hallmark and others. As it transpired at the hearing, let me proceed that by saying that prior to the hearing, you see Carol Briggs, who served both as counsel to the agency as well as a staff. This member of the agency was very well aware that the Department of Administrative Services had nothing whatsoever to do with this case. I had incorporated the participation of the Department of Environmental Services into my complaint. I didn't need my appeal. When I filed it, she was aware at that time that it just did not belong in the case. And in my preparations for the hearing, I consumed an enormous amount of time. And I was in a very confused state because of the misrepresentation of parties, the information, the voluminous materials that Ms. Briggs was sending to me. And this continued until the very time of the hearing that she began to speak and confessed that this had all been an error and that. The business of the Department of Administrative Services had nothing to do with this matter. Nevertheless, a great deal of harm has been done to me reputationally and otherwise by her error, which she should have corrected long before the hearing because she was aware of it when I filed my appeal. And that is that outrageous, malicious, horrible statements will make about me, both. By the letter that it became part of the record, it shouldn't have in this case, from the Department of Administrative Services to the Commissioner of Agriculture. But the error that I'd like you to address is to send this matter back for a hearing on the actual facts set forth in my complaint directed to Bruce Sherman. Now, I found out just very shortly before the proceedings that he had since retired from the state of Connecticut. And I was left at a complete loss. Well, now what do I do? Carol Briggs, the attorney, is not a substitute for him. And there's nothing in the record to show that he was authorized by Mr. Sherman to carry on the way he did, supposedly in his behalf, in this matter. So I brought this issue during the hearing to the attention of the hearing officer, very capable hearing officer, who was so exasperated with Ms. Briggs herself that she uttered the word crazy in referring to the kind of case that Ms. Briggs was putting on, and it was beyond crazy, believe me. But what I was looking for was the recognition that I had the right to cross-examine her on the basis of finding her credibility with regard to what she said, she I believe. I have no reason to know or not know whether what she did release to me was complete. She retained a claim to have withheld materials from me on the basis of three privileges that she claimed at the hearing, not before. Attorney-client, work privilege, and attorney work privilege. I was not allowed to ask her about these issues and to try to move toward a factual basis for the hearing officer to determine whether or not she had credibility when she stated she had fully complied with my request. And this was especially egregious given her personal attack against me without a basis. I have requested another freedom. You may hear from me further on this, as I have filed a further request for the basis of the referral by Ms. Briggs to the Department of Administrative Services, because it's all fanciful, it's made up, it's hysterical, it's crazy. And I'm entitled to redeem my good reputation. And I should have had the opportunity to do that in the first this year. So I have requested that the matter be remanded for a hearing limited to the matter of Ms. Briggs' credibility so I can fully examine her on that point and not be precluded from getting into the issues she raised falsely and maliciously in obtaining a referral to the Department of Administrative Services. That is a fundamental right. I should not be maligned publicly and formally in this way. And she did not have the courtesy of showing up here at the jury today to hear me out or to offer defense. So I hope that you will have an opportunity to see the brief that I filed under their deadline pressure because I've been given 30 days, I think, to file it. I asked for four forms of relief for cross-examination of Ms. Briggs to determine her credibility, Dr. Sherman's failure to respond to my complaint. There was no evidence to establish the basis for that, and nor was there any basis for her to be acting and testifying in Dr. Sherman's behalf. There was no communication authorization. And that was important here because he was stepping way out of bounds, and it's very unlikely that Dr. Sherman would have authorized this kind of misconduct. And then, finally, to engage into issues claimed exemptions, because it's not uncommon for an attorney representing a client to go overboard in claiming attorney-client exemptions when they don't apply, or that attorney is not really aware of all the ins and outs of the law surrounding attorney-client privilege, and also attorney work product and deliberative privilege, the three privileges she claimed to exclude some of the materials I'm entitled to, I believe, at least under the Freedom of Information Act. I deeply respect the work that you do. I honor you. I thank you for your attention. This particular case, you probably know it, confronted a case like this before. I hope you don't again. It's been extremely labor-intensive and it shouldn't be repeated. But thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'm happy to try to respond.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Strader, I'll move down to the U.S.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Yes.
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 Yes, I can. There was no brief file, sir.
Okay.
I anything. There was no brief that was filed.
Okay.
Data the hearing in this matter, the respondent, to develop
added those records to the complaint. They did go over and above what they're required to do, just so you know. I want you to be clear on that.
Okay. May I just respond to that, please? If they don't know who to send them to, I'm wondering if I know who to send them to. If they attempted to get this information from the department, they will leave healthy records. How can I, as a, you know, as not being an insider there, know where to have these records, and to determine if anyone else, but they're just floating there in the request. So it's a dilemma for me because, again, I don't know.
I will move adoption to hearing officers report.
Commissioner Hankin, second.
Yes.
Yes.
This is Colleen Murphy. This is the one that we were attempting to locate, Ms. Byrne, because she had indicated that she wanted to be part of these proceedings, but she does not appear to be waiting, and we have, during the course of the meeting, tried to reach out to her again, and she has not responded. The decision is in her favor, so I would recommend you go forward with it. At least it is in her favor at this point. She can reach out to us afterward if there's something that we're not understanding about what happened today.
Okay.
Seeing that the complaint is not here, there's no objection from the respondent. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion
is
made
and
seconded. Is there a discussion?
Yes. And when we said you need to
find a larger venue to be reviewed. What they ended up doing was, first of all, open up the door to the town hall. All the soldiers coming in, and then the people that went outside tried to stay close to the door and still could not hear what was being presented inside the hall. I'm trying to get my thoughts together here, I'm sorry. And one thing that we wanted to know was if this car had people to be there that night because of the subject matter of the meeting. So she knew that a large number of people were infected. So why didn't she, in good faith, put it into a large venue before that? She actually came on a statement such as, this hall is big enough for residents to move. We can't do it again. Mr. Carr, in the most recent statement, and again, to make it sound like we were in a larger building, said that the door was open for meeting people. And outside the door to the girl's hall, and the door was left open. And as I stated, that was outside in the parking lot. It was not inside a building. And those of us that were fortunate enough to squeeze into the hall get a little bit warmer, but most people were not. And then also, Mr. Byrne also mentioned that witnesses such as my husband Val and three of the Burgesses supported the fact that most of the time the meeting places hadn't approved for the people coming in because most of the time it's a very small meeting. And yes, that is true. However, there have been times in the past where it's been on overload and it has been moved to a larger venue. Also, they stated that they could not even tell how many people were standing outside in the pool, and they were the ones running the meeting. So I think our biggest point is we do not want this change to mess. What we would like is to have the board, especially the acting warden, admit handled the meeting very inappropriately, and that from now on, in the future, if a large number of people show up for a meeting, that it be moved to a larger venue either that night or rescheduled, so that people aren't inside and frigid weather in the middle of the winter, or if the weather is good, we are not standing out there, and by the way, the parking lot is a dirt parking lot. So then you made it worse. There are rocks, people can fall and slip. And we just think it was inappropriate the way they did it. And that she has learned from this, and that larger efforts will be made to run the meetings in a much more proper way.
Thank you very much. and with a small number of hearing officers did find that they closed with 10 people, and then what happened was people were able to enter the room during the public comment portion, and many people left after speaking to the commission. So at some point, anyone who wanted to attend was actually in the room.
I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankin, second.
Yes.
Yes.
Attorney Harmon would like to just give you a brief update just on appeal numbers and where we are with those appeals in court. So, briefly, Attorney Harmon, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. So, I confirmed with all the attorneys yesterday and tell them the pending appeals, and I thought the commission would be interested to know that currently we have 12 cases pending in various courts. We have 2 cases pending at the Supreme Court. Both of those cases are fully briefed, and we're waiting for oral argument dates, which will probably come in the fall. have five cases pending in various stages of litigation. So some of them, plaintiff's brief has been filed, other ones are waiting for scheduling orders, but 12 cases altogether. And if the commissioners have any particular questions, I just thought they would be interested in knowing how many cases we have in the various courts at this moment. Thank you.
Next, under Executive Director's Report, just a couple of things for you. And the first one up is the consideration about returning to in-person hearings and meetings. And I had asked all of you for your thoughts on it, and we've internally talked about it in the office with our reopening team and some other staff members, and I think we all generally would like to get back to in person. So we're looking at, for both commission meetings and hearings, looking at doing that starting in August. So a little bit of a lag here just to let us kind of put the word out that we will be doing this and get word on our website. And we've got a number of cases already scheduled for June that are already listed to be done in a remote fashion. So we feel that by August we can get all of our ducks in a row and flip the switch back to seeing each other again in person. And of course, if we run into any struggles in the fall or the winter, I think we have our model that we can return to with relative ease, I guess. But the hope, of course, is that we wouldn't have to do that. So I think many of us here are pretty excited about that. These remote hearings have been very convenient in many, many ways, but just so you know, there's quite a burden on our support staff in terms of preparation for those meetings, even for these meetings, to ensure that we get a hold of everybody and try to ascertain whether they'll be participating or not. And of course, we've had a few technological issues along the way. So we'll keep you posted on that. And other than that, I just wanted to report, I guess, under staff reports that we did make an offer that was accepted for our staff attorney 2 candidate. And it's Mary Kate Smith, and she will likely be starting, we're not sure yet, either the beginning of June or the middle of June. And I want to thank Commissioner Hankins for his help with the interview process for that. And second, we're about to extend a formal offer to a paralegal candidate, and that will be to replace Wendy Paradis, who was our paralegal extraordinaire. So we're happy that those positions will be filled in the near future. And aside from that, I have no other reports. Under staff reports, I'd like to go to the legislative report and ask Attorney Paula Perlman, if she's on board with us, if she could give a brief wrap-up to you, to be followed by a lengthier report down the road. But the session is over as of last Wednesday. So, Paula, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me? Can you see me? I think so.
Hear you.
So just briefly, you should have received a status update of those 8 bills which we submitted, statements in support. We sent it out yesterday, so hopefully you received that. And as Colleen stated, I am going to be compiling a lengthier, legislative report, the final report that we do every year. But I did want to just highlight the outcome of 2 proposals, one favorable, one not so favorable. And the first, the budget, concerns the budget. This is the favorable outcome. As you know, over the years, the complexity of our cases and the volume of our in-camera submissions has increased. And yet, we've had a vacant attorney position that for several years now that has gone unfunded. Fortunately, the budget that passed this year actually includes funding for a staff 2 attorney position. So that is going to really help us and hopefully hoping we can get someone sooner rather than later. That was a favorable outcome. On the unfavorable side was that the proposals recommended by the commission did not go anywhere. So they received a public hearing and they made it out of committee, but unfortunately they died on the House calendar. We're not the only proposal that died on the House calendar. There's many that did, but unfortunately, those five recommendations that we had submitted to the Government Administration Elections Committee didn't move beyond being voted on committee. Now, that doesn't mean that next year, if the commission wishes to do so, we can put them in. Again, we can try. Sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years for a proposal to pass. We passed by the General Assembly, so perhaps we'll have some better luck next year, which would a longer session. So, again, I just really wanted to highlight those two, and once again, repeat that I will be providing a fuller report on all the other bills in sometime soon. But I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Closing on that, Mr. Chairman, just want to thank our legislative team that worked. At least it was a short session, but we have a group that, as you know, reviews all of the bills and flags anything that's concerning or positive for us. And that team, of course, is head by Paula. Mary and I participate on it. Danielle, he participates on it. Zach Hyde, Jen Miller. And Tom Hennick, he joins us for the ride. So thank you to all of them. We're glad that it's over, but I don't think it's a surprise that bill of ours didn't pass in a short session like this. It wasn't controversial or anything. It just went to the wayside along with a number of other proposals. So I'm pretty hopeful for next year if we put it back out there that we'll get it passed this time. So, but we are very happy about the budget. We worked hard on that and got the funding, so I think we're in good shape.
Great job. You just want to understand one thing. Are we going to be in person the next time we have a meeting?
Not until August would be the plan. And we'll give further instruction about that. We have to do a few things here too to prepare the building security and folks here. They're not really used to people in large quantities coming in for meetings like this, so we want to make sure that the security is set up appropriately and that they know to let people in for our meetings without giving anyone a hard time. So we have a number of things to put in place, so we're thinking of August for that, Mr. Chairman.
It could be outside in the cold, right?
No siree. All right, that's all I have.
I just have one quick question. Where did the legislature end up on remote and in-person public agency hearings, period? I know somehow it was passed the local jurisdiction, but I can't clarify my mind. You have a public hearing that's in person. Does it have to have a remote hearing also, or it does not have to have it? How does it get a plan?
Well, I'll take that one.
So the provisions that passed, well, let me just say that the bill that passed this year regarding remote meetings is substantively the same as last year's. The only difference is that last year had a sunset provision of April 30th of 2022, and so when the bill that passed this year eliminated that sunset provision. But to answer your question with respect to the remote meetings, the provisions don't require agencies to hold any remote meeting or hearing. What the provisions allow is they authorize an agency, if they choose to hold a hybrid meeting or a remote meeting, that they have to follow these certain procedures. So no one's required to do it, but or an agency is not required to hold something remote. If they want to hold the meeting or the hearing completely in person, they can do that. They do not have to offer a remote option. However, if they choose to have board members or commissioners meet in person, or some of them in person and others remote, then they have to afford the public the same opportunity to attend either in person or remote. And that goes also to if you decide to hold completely remote as we're doing today, then the public has to be afforded the opportunity to attend completely remote. So again, it's not a requirement, but if you do, you have to follow these procedures that have been set up by the General Assembly in those provisions.
One last question. On the municipal level, does that mean the town decides for the whole town, or each agency of the town decides?
I think that would say the provisions are contemplated that it's each agency, but I suppose if a town decides among itself that everyone's going to follow the same procedures, and they went, but it's anticipated that it's individual agencies or public agencies. I think, Kyle, I think that was the intent, that it would be the individual agency deciding.
Yes, I think so too. I think there will be some additional questions raised maybe next year to further elaborate on this remote process. There were those that said, we should keep this remote option for people regardless. You know, if you're going in person, you should still have some component where people could just call in if they wanted to or tune in on their computer. So and there are a number of people advocating for that. Conversely, there are a number of people who are advocating, that just we should be back in person completely. So I think there will be a number of questions that we've pledged to meet with a couple of legislators in the off session to kind of flesh this out a little bit more.
I followed trying to read the question, and I was still personally confused as to who ultimately has the authority, and now there's this public meeting decided to do remote also. One agency that flushes out rules will kind of be different for everybody. And just as I read the legislation, it's like sort of a little bit open, but I was trying to figure out where one could read, or how towns and others could find out.
All agencies have to follow the provisions that are outlined in the Public Act that passed. So everyone has to follow them. And in terms of who's making the decision whether to hold it remotely or not, that's within the agency discretion.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I have a question.
Sure.
So, Paula, you're saying that if somebody were to participate remotely, that the public, let's say a member of the commission participating remotely, the public would have to be allowed to participate remotely. Is that correct?
Do you mean participate, like
we did prior to COVID, when the late Commissioner Shaw was on the telephonically participating. He was participating remotely, but we didn't allow, the commission did not allow people to come before the commission telephonically. We had to be in person.
I think the intention under the proposal is that if it's that would be considered a hybrid meeting.
But you're saying that now you would have to allow the public to participate.
To attend, give it a remote option to the public. Yes.
That's not how it was prior to COVID. If we had a meeting and we had my side, we had our town attorney participate in a meeting telephonically prior to COVID. They could do that. We did not have a call in for members of the public. You're saying that the law has changed now, that the public is required to be allowed the same opportunity as a fellow member or a town attorney who calls in telephonically.
I don't think it's absolutely clear, but I would I would interpret it as it requiring that you allow it.
If we went back to, saying back to normal, and we had meetings in public, that we're not, if we had a commissioner that participated telephonically, which was allowed prior to 2019, now you're saying that because we do that, we need to make all the entire meeting component eligible for everybody to attend.
I think that the proposal specifically, or excuse me, the provisions specifically address hybrid meetings. I think that would be considered a hybrid meeting.
Well, the way we used to do a hybrid meeting? Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry?
So the way we used to do our meetings, the commission meetings, you're saying that that was considered a hybrid meeting now?
In my opinion, it was.
I just want to interrupt because I have really seen Commissioner Spear's question. It was in the back of my mind. I didn't want to go ahead and answer directly. But because if it's each agency in the state that's going to adopt these rules, and we are the Freedom of Information Commission, the rules we adopt, it sounds like we're going to need to have rules for our August meetings. And it may be worth thinking about, are we ready to be the but August is a timely time because somebody is going to have to take the lead in clarifying these rules. If they're clarified by then, that's one thing, by a lot of people. But if we take the lead in clarifying these rules, or whether or not we take it, people will look to us to set some kind of example consistent with our general principles of why we exist. So I'm suddenly trying to sort of head toward that issue a little bit. Mr. Streeter went to a little bit more direct. Plus, I was just trying to learn because I'm still confused in my own mind. So maybe we should come to conclusions, but just think a little bit about and watch what's happening, because a lot of people will be asking these questions from Board of Education's to all the various agencies in our state. And I'm a little confused when the state will have one set of rules for each agency in the state. So I'm trying to leave a little air there because I think there they are. It's unclear yet. Please, the mic.
Well, one thing we can do, and we'll certainly look at those kinds of questions, we'll go back and look at our primer and the Public Act as it originally passed and try to get a little more clarity around those types of questions. And as you say, kind of keep your eye on the horizon and see what else is happening out there. I don't expect any big clarity to happen, though, between now and the end of the next legislative session, quite frankly.
There are a lot of people that set rules of the road. And that's why I really appreciate Paul's interpretation. But I'm trying to put it in also a little bit of context cautiously.
All right, got it.
Thank you.
One clarification, I guess, for the executive director. So in August, when we go back to meet in person, is it going to be a hybrid meeting, or are we back in person at a regular meeting?
I think the idea was to make it clear and simple that it would be in person. We would be doing it completely in person. But that's certainly, that can be open for discussion. We just got to really avoid any questions that we would be doing the in-person option.
Only because just the way, the point of my argument in the questions before is that we have incarcerated individuals that participate remotely, and we had a cutout for that for years and years and years, and then all of a sudden somebody's going to say that because we're having Paula's definition or response, that she considers that to be a hybrid meeting, suddenly we don't have that. We cannot have that. We have to allow everybody to participate.
I'm not entirely sure what you mean exactly by participation. I think Paula's mainly talking about have some sort of availability for people to listen in at our meetings, not really addressing in terms of the parties what we want them to do, or our hearings themselves, how we'll conduct those. I think there's like a lot of offshoots of the question that you're raising, Commissioner, but certainly food for thought for us. So we'll go back at it and look at this a little more closely.
And I would just say, with the current status, you should also keep an eye on the quorum issue, particularly in August. That is, you don't have fully appointed a commission, the number of people attending becomes important.
Right. Well, somewhat oddity in our law is that our quorum is 3. So,
I not realize it.
Fortunately, we've almost always had more than 3. We do have that as our number, but we always keep an eye on that, definitely.
Yes, I definitely support return to in-person as feasible as possible, but in context with everything else we just discussed.
Sure. You've raised some good questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move you adjourn.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
You can roll call of those in favor of adjourning. Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Dushy?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
I want to get yes. For adjourning. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for your hard work.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.